going to breathe now. Everyone breathe. It's always important to be mindful of our breathing, isn't it? I haven't talked about breathing for a while. We all breathe for a living. Don't forget that. Before I bring on my next guest, I wanted to just mention we have lost another wonderful advocate for veganism. Just a couple of days ago, my friend and colleague George Eisman passed, and he was a dietitian and an author of several wonderful books, The Most Noble Diet, Food Selection and Ethics, back in 1994, and his Don't Let Your Diet Add to Your Cancer Risk. He did a lot of great speaking all over the country and abroad, and I was fortunate to see him last October, and so sorry to hear about his passing. So, George, thank you for everything. All right, I want to bring on part two's guest, KCT Taft. Dr. KCT Taft is professor of psychiatry at Boston University School of Medicine and an internationally recognized researcher in the area of family violence prevention. Dr. Taft has published over 100 peer-reviewed scientific articles, chaired an American Psychological Association task force on trauma, and consulted with the United Nations on preventing violence and abuse globally. He has recently published two other books, Motivational Methods for Vegan Advocacy, A Clinical Psychology Perspective, and Trauma-Informed Treatment, End of Intimate Partner Violence. Dr. Taft is co-founder of Vegan Publishers and a dedicated vegan. Casey, hello.
Hi, Karen, how are you?
I'm great. I love talking to dedicated vegans. Thank you for being a dedicated vegan.
Sure. Also, I just want to throw in there, we were very fortunate to publish George Eisman's last book, A Guide to Vegan Nutrition, as well. So we feel very honored to kind of have that distinction of carrying his book and getting to know him a little bit. And it's, you know, we're very saddened to hear the news about his passing as well.
Yes, indeed. What can we do? Just breathe.
Right.
And feel. Yeah. Anyway, such a good guy. I also wanted to mention he was on the board of the Naylith Foundation, a wonderful organization that supports many vegetarian and vegan nonprofit organizations. And the Naylith Foundation has been a wonderful supporter since our inception of responsible eating and living. George Eisman was a part of that.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, wow, right? All right, Casey, let us talk about your book, Millennial Vegan. Why did you write this book?
So, as a psychologist and also as owner of Vegan Publishers, I often hear from younger vegans. They often post on our pages, they send us emails, and they talk about, they write about, you know, their struggles in kind of being vegan, you know, perhaps amongst family members, loved ones who are not too accepting of their veganism, or they write about, you know, how they're being bullied by other folks, like in their schools or in other places or online. And it really just kind of struck me that there aren't really any resources for younger vegans, for millennial vegans, you know, between the ages of 15 and 34. So really this to me was just my attempt to try to support younger vegans because, you know, frankly, I'm in awe of young vegans, you know, who go vegan in spite of all the obstacles, all the brainwashing we all experience. You know, for myself and a lot of folks I know, it took a lot longer for things to click for us and to really develop awareness. But younger vegans do it at an earlier age, and I just wanted to kind of put something out there to provide a resource for them.
Very nice. I don't know if you caught any of my last interview with Barbara King, the author of Personalities on the Plate, but talking about the scientific studies observing other species and how they react to each other in their own natural surroundings makes me think of what a higher intelligence might observe watching humans react to each other in our own circles. I can't imagine that it would really be impressive in some situations.
Right, yeah.
I mean, the way we bully each other and respond to each other is really not something to be proud of, but it's important to have an awareness and skills to manage through that. So that's why your book is important.
Right. Yeah, and well, my job, I'm a psychologist, and I develop programs to prevent violence and to work with people who engage in violence. So that is one of my kind of specialty areas. So I did want to kind of make sure I touched on bullying and touched on abuse. So people can recognize when they're experiencing it or even if they're engaging in it and do something to stop it.
Now, you mentioned that you're in, I forget the words exactly you use, in awe or whatever words you use of the younger people who choose to go vegan.
Right.
And I think I've said this before on this program. Sometimes I think it's easier for younger people to make this change. They haven't been around so long. They haven't had a big history of eating animals for as long. And I know for myself, I started on the vegetarian path when I was 15 years old. I didn't want to eat animals. But a part of what gave me the strength was just wanting to be contrary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think there's probably truth to that. I think it's different for everybody. For a lot of young people, though, they're really struggling with a lot of things, right? They're struggling with their own identities. Many young people nowadays are struggling to find a job and to get out of student loan debt and to kind of deal with all the problems that previous generations have sort of created, you know, in some ways. So, in some ways, millennials really have it pretty bad relative to prior generations, you know, economically and in other ways. So for me to kind of deal with all of that and to still have the awareness to go vegan, I think is impressive. I know for myself, when I was younger, I felt like I was like too screwed up to make a change like that. Like I felt like I needed to get my life in order and figure things out and get a firmer footing before I can make any kind of change. So I think I knew at a fairly young age it was wrong to do harm to animals, to eat them, to use them in various ways. At some level I knew, but I think I pushed it out of my awareness because at another level I felt like maybe I wasn't ready to deal with that because I was just trying to get my life together.
Yeah, I do know that people can be pretty mean. I remember I was in my late teens, early 20s, and my brother-in-law at the time was ruthless when we would all sit down for a family meal, you know, bombarding me with questions. And he was a lawyer and, you know, was putting me under this grilling of, that's an interesting term to use when we're talking about food, grilling, but asking me all of these intense questions. And I had to speak up for myself. It was really a challenging time. So that's why your book is important. For, you know, I'm a tough cookie. I'm a strong person, and I don't mind being in the midst of controversy. But for a lot of people, it is hard, especially when there are so many other challenges. But you know, it's challenging too for adults. I know another friend of mine, also a lawyer, who is vegan, has had a really hard time in business being upfront when at a conference or at a lunch when they bring in food to just speak up and say, I need to eat this food and not this food. Can you make sure it's here for me?
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And the book really, it could apply to those of any generation, really. I mean, most of it is just how to communicate effectively in general. And when I've given talks on the book, I do have older folks who come and they get really active in the discussion and they talk about the struggles they have in communicating with their family members and, you know, navigating all these different kinds of situations. So it's certainly not only relevant for younger people. And even myself, you know, as an older adult, I've had to deal with all kinds of issues. And as a trained psychologist, I've still had difficulties communicating with loved ones. So I certainly think this can apply to folks from any age group.
You know, as I mentioned, I got on this path as a teenager, and my parents were not thoroughly supportive. They let me do what I wanted to do. They gave a lot of pushback. But I know it's hard for many today, and you mentioned, especially in high school or junior high school, when the child is not the person buying the food or preparing the food, it can make it really, really challenging. You know, we have a transcription program where we have volunteers transcribe these radio programs, like the one we're doing right now will be transcribed shortly. And sometimes I have high school students transcribe them, and they share the same information that they want to be vegan, but they're living at home.
Right.
They can't prepare their meals or shop for their meals, and it's hard.
Yeah, I hear those stories a lot. People message me about their situations fairly often, and it really is kind of heartbreaking where you have a younger person who really doesn't want to do harm to animals, and they feel like they don't have a choice because they have no control over the food that they're eating. And it really is hard for them. I can't imagine what that would feel like if you really feel a strong moral conviction to not do harm to animals, and yet you feel like you have no other choice but to consume them. That must be really hard.
Yeah. Now, you also have a section on it's lonely being a vegan, or it's lonely being vegan. And I think it really depends on where you are. I imagine there are some locations that's really a lot lonelier than in other places. Fortunately, with social media, we have the opportunity to find like-minded people anywhere on the planet these days.
Right. True.
Yeah.
True. But loneliness one can also feel lonely even if you're kind of surrounded by people, right? I mean, one form of loneliness that I often hear about is when, you know, one is with people that they care about and people that, you know, perhaps their whole lives they've been able to share how they're growing, how they're changing, how they're evolving, their interests, and what's important to them. And then all of a sudden, they're going vegan and they want to share it with people they care about, and they get this kind of pushback, and they feel like nobody really wants to hear about it. And in fact, sometimes just by our presence as vegans, other people can get really defensive around us and feel like they have to defend themselves or defend eating animals or what have you. And that could be kind of alienating too. Also, for some folks, when they feel kind of alienated or lonely when they share the message of veganism with loved ones, they try to share with other people what they've learned about the harm they're doing to animals, and the other person who they know to be otherwise kind and compassionate and caring is totally non-receptive to the message. So that also can be really sort of alienating. So there are lots of ways that we can kind of feel isolated and alienated, even if we do have other vegans around us. It certainly helps. The more of a, you know, vegan community we can kind of build for ourselves, and social media and all of that does help. But it still can feel lonely when the people you care most about or you're closest to, where you feel like they're rejecting you or rejecting your message.
You brought up two different instances in the book that I want to bring up and what we can do in those different situations. I really appreciated them because they happen all the time. So I hope I remember the two. Number one is somewhat positive. So you're eating with your family, or you're in a restaurant, and the non-vegan person, the non-vegetarian person, is trying to help you in your selections, or is aware of your eating differences, and is making a point to bring that out, their awareness of what you're eating. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a good thing, right? That sensitivity. Sometimes it can be frustrating when I'm in a restaurant. Like when somebody says, oh, look, you can have this on the menu and you can have this on the menu. And, you know, you could read the menu too, but they feel a need to be helpful. And is there a good way to respond to that?
So when somebody is kind of positively showing understanding for your veganism, I think letting other people know that you appreciate that, appreciate when they do kind things for you, when they make you a vegan meal, or if they have a vegan gathering, you know, without animal products. I think it's really important in our relationships to not only let other people know when we're unhappy about things, but also to point out the positive things people do for us. That's something that we do a lot in couples therapy and family therapy, where we try to work to show other people that that we recognize when they do something nice for us. And the more we pay attention to that, the more we let other people know that we notice that, the more nice things they're going to do. So you're kind of reinforcing those positive behaviors.
Yeah, I could do more of that because, you know, when somebody's pointing out on a menu what I can eat, I have this reaction like, I can see what's there, but I need to make an effort to be more encouraging and thankful and appreciative for their concern. The other one is kind of the opposite, and that is when people, like you said, are defensive. So you could be at a restaurant, or you could just meet someone and they find out about what you eat and their reaction is, oh, I don't eat a lot of meat, or I don't consume a lot of dairy, or, you know, I only do this. And as a psychologist, what's happening?
Well, I think what's happening is they're experiencing some level of guilt and shame because we as vegans are really walking reminders of the harm other people do to non-human animals. I think people have some general awareness that they're eating dead animals or the secretions of animals. And I think they know that these animals are harmed in some way, but they find different ways to kind of push it out of their awareness. But we are kind of direct reminders of the harm that they do. We can bring out these kinds of shame responses simply by saying we're vegan. And oftentimes the more strongly we advocate for animals, the stronger the shame responses are. I typically argue that, you know, we should be mindful of how we're engaging in animal advocacy, where we shouldn't engage in name calling or the really aggressive kind of labeling of other people and that kind of stuff, because that really heightens their shame response and it makes it pretty much impossible that they're going to listen to anything that we have to say. But on the other hand, we should not shy away from talking about the harm we do to animals. We shouldn't shy away from speaking out for our animals. And some people are going to have this shame response no matter what we do. And we have to keep in mind that, you know, we're not responsible for their reactions, that they're the ones who are ultimately responsible for their own feelings.
All of these things that you're saying, especially this one, applies to everything, not just veganism.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's something we talk about a lot. Talk about a lot as a psychologist, for sure.
Yes, and when, you know, a lot of the things that you brought up in the book, navigating relationships, all of the advice that you give will work in dealing with your food choices, but it works. These are classic concepts in navigating relationships.
Exactly.
And sometimes I think, you know, you mentioned dating vegetarians and being in a romantic relationship with someone who might not eat the same way you do. And a few decades ago, I could have done that. I don't think I could do it today. Unfortunately, I live with a wonderful man who is vegan. So we're very happy here. We both love to cook, and we make great food. Not everybody's that lucky.
Right, exactly.
But when you eat differently, that can magnify the problems you already have in communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think that's true. And also, you know, like you're suggesting, I could never date a non-vegan either. I'm married as well to a vegan. But it's hard to imagine to be with somebody who has such a fundamental kind of different point of view ethically. You know, I think unless that person is open-minded and they're willing to consider changing, or they're trying to change, or they're trying to grow or evolve in some way, I think that would be really difficult. And I do hear a lot of stories from vegans who are dating or with a non-vegan, and they just at some point decide that they just can't do it anymore because it kind of goes against like their fundamental ethical beliefs. So that really is difficult. I think it gets more challenging where folks who are not vegan, they weren't vegan when they started dating, and then one person changes and the other person doesn't, and that gets more complicated because they have differences in kind of their expectations for their relationship. But yeah, it's really difficult for a lot of couples to navigate these differences, for sure.
Okay, outside of this wonderful book, your bio says that you're a professor of psychiatry at Boston University School of Medicine. Do you have an opportunity to do any vegan proselytizing while you're at the university?
That's a good question. You know, I mean, to be honest, not too much. So I'm primarily a researcher, a clinical researcher. So I run groups. I run clinical trials. So a lot of what I do is really working with patients and working with folks in my own lab and colleagues. So these conversations come up a little bit with my colleagues, but I'm not ever in front of a large group of students giving lectures about veganism. Unfortunately, at this point in my career, my animal activism and my day job, where I'm preventing violence towards humans instead of non-humans, they're sort of separate, and I'm still trying to think of ways to bring it together, because I do think all forms of violence and oppression are linked in various ways. So I would like to bring it together, and I have actually started working on another book that does bring it together more about how we can prevent all forms of violence. But in my day-to-day job, I mostly focus on how I can end domestic violence. And then when I get home, I focus on how we can end violence towards non-human animals.
Well, dealing with the violence in human relationships is a very real challenge. Humans can be violent, and yeah, we see it with how we treat other species, but we treat our own selves so poorly. We're violent against our loved ones, and we're violent against ourselves.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
How do we fix that? How do you treat that, Casey?
How do you treat violence?
How do you treat that? Yeah.
that's a tough to come up with a fast answer for that. I have written a book about that. What I found to be the most effective way to reach people is you have to, just like in animal advocacy, you have to help somebody want to change. You have to figure out where they are in terms of their readiness for changing and work with them to decide to make that change, to come up with a clear goal to change. And I think, just like in our animal advocacy, when I'm trying to get somebody to end their violence, I actually listen. I make an effort to listen to them. I listen to their story. I listen to their history of trauma, and I have them tell their story. And once they tell their story and whatever they've experienced, most of the people I work with have been abused. They've experienced various forms of trauma. Once they feel like you've listened to what they have to say, then they listen to what I have to say, and they're more likely to join with me in wanting to end, you know, various forms of violence and abuse. So I think listening is a big part of it. Dealing with trauma is a big part of it. Helping them set goals is a big part of it. And then teaching them really specific strategies for how to, once they decide to make the change, how are they going to go about doing it? And, so I wrote a book on these general ideas applied to animal advocacy called Motivational Methods for Vegan Advocacy, which I think the general rules for change and how we help other people change really are fairly consistent, whether we're talking about animal advocacy or ending other forms of violence.
Okay, well, Casey Taff, thank you for all of that, and thank you for being the kind and intelligent, sensitive person you are with humans and with non-humans. I think all of us appreciate the work that you're doing and for writing Millennial Vegan. That. And thank you for joining in. It's All About Food today.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for having me. It was great.
Yeah, we're just about out of time, so I wanted to thank you for joining me. And that was Dr. Casey T. Taft, author of Millennial Vegan, Tips for Navigating Relationships, Wellness, and Everyday Life as a Young Animal Advocate. Okay, just a couple of minutes left. I wanted to remind you, coming up this Saturday is the beginning of the Food Revolution Annual Summit. And I'm a part of that, as I am or have been for the last few years, offering up new recipes every day of the summit. It's a 9-day event. It's free. And if you visit responsibleeatingliving.com, you can sign up and register. And it's an amazing event. And if you can't listen in the morning when the interviews are aired, they are available for a full 24 hours. Check it out. It's also Tuesday. All my shows are on a Tuesday, but I just wanted to highlight that for those of you who are into Taco Tuesday, we have a tasty tempeh Taco Tuesday meat. It's a plant meat, of course, but it's a wonderful recipe, and you can find that, too, at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Oh, well, look at that. Here we are. It's the end of another It's All About Food show. Thank you so much for joining me. You can always find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com and email me at info@realmeals.org. I love hearing from you. Thanks for listening. And remember, have a delicious week.